Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham, and we are here to discuss relievers. Rick, how's it going? We didn't have much time to talk before we hit record, so is there any news you would like to share with me or the listeners, or both, I guess, because they're listening?
Nothing new, nothing crazy. It's been 2 weeks since we talked, so there's a lot of stuff to cover, a lot of news, notes, injuries, transactions, all that. So yeah, let's just get right into it, I guess.
Totally agree. Yes. I was in Colorado last week, and Rick, you got to go to a Celtics playoff game. How was that?
It was a bad game.
Oh no.
It was, they won the series, but the game, I went to game two of the Celtics Cavs, and yeah, mm-hmm. ugly showing, but it was still fun. It's always fun going into the garden.
Have you been to a playoff game in any sport before?
Not for a Celtics game. I've been to Bruins games, playoff games, never to a Red Sox game though. That's one, another one I haven't been able to make it to, which I definitely would. Now that I can, you know, afford it, but it's still hard to get tickets for that sometimes. But yeah, you know, playoff games, the atmosphere is always a lot better.
Yeah, definitely. I've never been to a playoff game of any sort, but hopefully that is in my future at some point. But like you said, we've got a ton of stuff to get through since we haven't talked in a couple of weeks. So we've got plenty of injuries, plenty of transactions, and plenty of movement on your closer ranks. That's what we're going to focus on today. So let's just hop right into it. We'll start with the injuries, leading off with Brock Stewart of the Twins, who was placed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder tendonitis. And even since that injury, which happened a couple weeks ago, Stewart has yet to begin throwing and got a PRP injection earlier this week. Jorge Alcala was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but then he was subsequently optioned back to the minors to make room for Josh Staumont. So right now the Twins are without the guy who was their top setup man before Yoan Duran returned, and now he's gone. And the Twins are looking for more setup help because outside of Griffin Jackson, Yoan Duran, not really the rest of the bullpen isn't really supporting them.
Yeah, and Justin Topa had some bad news this week as well. So, it looks like they're going to depend on it sounds like Stewart's injury is going to be pretty minor. He should be back hopefully by the end of the month or early June. But, yeah, it's really Jackson, Duran right now with the two lefties in Thielbar and Okert. And we've seen it's Duran's usage kind of, you know, fluctuating between the eighth inning and ninth inning based on, you know, matchups. And hopefully that's something that, you know, stops once they get Stewart back. I wonder if, you know, if they have like a healthy trio of Stewart and Jax, they would, you know, Baldelli would just, you know, feel comfortable with, all right, Duran's got like just giving those guys set innings because all three of them are just like so good. And I don't think there's too much of a need for Duran to go against the best, you know, part of the lineup when you got guys like Jackson Stewart as well. But for now it's not what we wanted for everyone who held on to Yoan Duran. He comes back, he looks great, but then, mm-hmm. you know, he gets a bunch of holds instead of saves, and it's like, this isn't what I was hoping for, but you know, hold tight. I think it will change, but I don't know. This trend is starting to tick back up again. You've seen it all over the place right now.
Yeah. After last year where we saw everybody being used traditionally, now it seems like we're getting back into the high leverage closer situation. They didn't do this with Duran last year, did they?
They didn't. I think I put it in, I wrote it somewhere. I think Duran had, I'm pretty sure this is right, 28 saves last year and one hold. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
He's already up to three holds.
Right. this didn't happen last year. So, yeah, interesting to see. And then, yeah, like, you know, if Pete Fairbanks coming back, he got a hold last night. That was kind of weird to see. But mm-hmm. I get that one because, you know, the Red Sox, you know, bottom half of their lineup is very weak. So if you want Fairbanks to face Devers, I get it. That makes sense. But mm-hmm. yeah, hopefully we start seeing the closers more in the traditional closer role for fantasy purposes. I understand it from a baseball standpoint, although I still do kind of like just having the traditional roles because I don't know. I feel like pitchers tend to like that as well and mm-hmm. pitch better, but I don't know. Things could change.
Yeah, and you're right. Definitely do not drop Yohan Duran right now. He's got a zero ERA through his first seven innings, striking out a third of the batters he's faced, and he's looked as dominant as ever. So definitely don't drop Duran. But yeah, definitely disappointing to see him with as many holds as saves thus far. We can move on to Pierce Johnson of the Braves, who's landed on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. And he's on track for a quick return. He should be back by the time this podcast is posted on Friday, which should help out a Braves bullpen that surprisingly has not been as reliable as it was in the past. I mean, Raisel Iglesias has been fine. AJ Minter is always there. And Joe Jimenez is very solid. But Aaron Bummer had a slow start to the season, and they're relying heavily on like Dylan Lee and Jesse Chavez and Jackson Stevens, which is not ideal.
Yeah. I mean, at least from the right side, Johnson gives them another, you know, option outside of Iglesias and Jimenez, because that's, you know, they have all those lefties and they're all kind of pitching not, you know, as well as they, you know, I think the Braves had expected them to. So, you know, Johnson, I'm surprised it's such a quick turnaround for Johnson, but that's good. It's good to see. It was a minor thing, hopefully. Especially him, you know, he throws so many curveballs. That's pretty much, you know, all he does. So that right elbow inflammation always is concerning for someone like that. But yeah, he should, you know, be a set right back into a setup role pretty quickly.
Definitely. All right. We can move to the Dodgers, who placed Evan Phillips on the 15-day IL with a right hamstring strain. Phillips threw a bullpen session on Wednesday, so it seems like he's going to be back at some point next week. Blake Treinen was activated from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move. He's thrown like five innings since 2021, so it's been a while since we've seen Treinen for an extended period of time, so it's great to see him back. For anybody that's not a massive hater of the Dodgers like myself, but Blake Treinen, four innings thus far, zero ERA, 38.5% strikeout rate. It's like he's just right back to being the dominant reliever he was prior to all the injuries. And it looks like Daniel Hudson has slid into the closer role in Phillips' absence, though he's only had, I think, one opportunity, and J.P. Fireison also got a save. So it's sort of up in the air right now who's truly the guy in the ninth.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a committee until Phillips returns. Treinen and Hudson as well. I mean, the velo's down this year, and that's to be expected coming off long injuries at their age. But it's still, their stuff moves so much. It's like it still plays. It's still working. Especially, you know, Treinen, the slider's still ridiculous. You know, I'm not sure what the type of upside is with him, and once everyone's healthy in that bullpen, I still think Hudson and Treinen are probably the top two setup options when everyone's healthy. That, unless, you know, Bruiser Gratterall comes back at some point really late in the season. But I think, you know, they have to trust those two guys over, you know, Joe Kelly and Alex Fezzia right now. But yeah, Treinen, I have him. I don't know if he's a top, you know, 10 holes option like he was, you know, back in his prime, but he's definitely moving up the list, and with more good outings, you know, he'll continue to move up.
Yeah, and speaking of Joe Kelly, he also hit the 15-day IL with a right shoulder strain. So they are without a couple of their top setup man in LA. Like you mentioned, pretty much all the names right now. Alex Vesia has moved into a more considerable high leverage role. JP Fireison has been used later in games, so he's not been too strong thus far. I think the most notable move in terms of the setup situation being open right now with so many guys on the IL is that Michael Grove has started to see holds, which is interesting because he was such a well-regarded starting pitching prospect, and he's sort of been forced into a bullpen role this year because of all the starters the Dodgers have. He was in a swingman role, but now he's in a traditional relief role, throwing one inning at a time. And despite a 5.64 ERA, he's actually got some interesting underlying metrics with a 30% strikeout rate, a 3.19 xFIP, 2.95 xERA. So I think Michael Grove might be legit. Do you think he could stay in this high leverage-ish role when Kelly and Phillips returns, or do you think he just moves back into a long relief role?
Probably back into a longer relief role when those guys return. But I don't know. It's the Dodgers. They're always kind of shuffling back. And I mean, there's usually like 10 pitchers on the IL at any given time for them. So it depends on who's healthy and what role is needed. So he might be able to kind of fit multiple roles for them. When Kyle Hurt gets back, I don't know what his status is too, but that's another, prospect name to keep an eye on for relief, setup help. But yeah, I mean, Grove is, he's got start SP eligibility. So for leagues where you're looking for, some holds out of your SPs, that is obviously someone to keep an eye on. But yeah, I do think he goes back to, they have Elizer Hernandez right now who pitched through 91 pitches yesterday and didn't look all that bad as their technical their long guy. So I would imagine Grove takes that spot once, once Phillips gets back.
Yeah, that makes sense. We can move over to our oft-injured friend on the Texas Rangers, Josh Spores, who is now on the IL for the second time this year. 15-day IL with a right rotator cuff strain. The Rangers are really struggling to find depth in this bullpen, which is something that we noticed throughout the offseason that the Rangers would have to do more. And so I guess it's smart for them to have both Kirby Yates and David Robertson being their top two guys since the rest of the bullpen has basically been non-existent outside of like Jacob Latz and his 18% strikeout rate. But with Spores out, that moves Leclerc back into a setup role. And I wonder if there's anybody else that might overtake him in terms of becoming that second setup man, because he does have a 6.62 ERA and has struggled all year long.
Yeah, they better hope there is someone, because I don't think that can last much longer.
No.
And even Robertson had a bad outing this week, and Yates is kind of showing some cracks. So yeah, they're gonna add at the deadline, maybe even sooner. They need to find some sort of pitching help. But I wonder if they try some guys from the minors first. I don't know if. Yeah, these guys aren't on the 40-man, but like, Emmanuel Teodo was a guy from Arizona that Greg Jewett was hyping up as he's a guy who throws like 99, but he's only in AA. But still, there's some name. Ricky DeVito as well is another interesting one. I don't know. They're gonna have to find help somewhere because, Leclerc's really really struggling bad right now. Jonathan Hernandez is not the same guy he once was. And then it's, Cole Wynn's not, Cole Wynn might be useful at some point, but right now it's not looking great. So yeah, they'll add at some point, but for now, Yates and Robertson are the only ones worth looking at. And those two guys are, 37 and 39. So, yeah, hopefully they have a whole full season without breaking down, or else the Rangers are going to be in a lot of trouble here.
Yeah, they do seem to be an ideal landing spot for Tanner Scott, who's likely to be traded at the deadline as an upcoming free agent.
Well, yeah,
so that could be something to watch there. And it would be interesting to see if he does slide into the closer role with Yates having such a good season.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I pretty much just at this point, I'm like, all right, wherever Tanner Scott goes, he's going to be a setup man probably. But yeah, if Texas is, it's similar to when they got Chapman last year, kind of, remember, where they were like, they had Will Smith, but so I feel like Tanner Scott could have kind of a Chapman like influence, especially with the walk rate being the same as well. But you could have a Chapman like influence for the Rangers down the stretch. I know,
that was a good one.
They're kind of the same.
and they really need a lefty too, as Latz is the only lefty in that bullpen, and Brock Burke's on the 60-day IL, so it's really a perfect fit. So maybe we'll make the prediction now that Tanner Scott ends up on the Rangers by August, but we'll have to put that in our back pocket for a couple months. We can move over to the Cubs, who placed a couple guys on the IL. First was Yency Almonte, who landed on the 15-day IL with a right shoulder strain, and Adbert Alzolay, who landed on the 15-day IL with a right flexor strain. Both of these guys, integral parts of this bullpen, both of these guys helping out the bullpen in different ways. Almonte was very solid, 30% strikeout rate, 3.45 ERA, while Alzolay has struggled all year long and has not looked like the guy that was the closer in the second half for the Cubs last year. And now what was once a bullpen that was exciting has quickly become one that is confusing. I mean, we know we've got Hector Neris and Mark Leiter Jr., but after that, I just have no idea how the holds shake out. The team acquired Tyson Miller from, I think it was the Mariners. They've got Colton Brewer in town, and Ben Brown has been used a lot, more so in a bulk relief role, but sometimes in high leverage situations. But I just don't know who's going to be the third and fourth guy in this bullpen right now. It looks to be Brewer and Miller, but I'm just not sure.
You know what the Cubs should do? They should trade for Tanner Scott. That's another team that could probably use.
That's right.
They're down lefties. They could use someone with closing experience because Hector Neris has been walking on a tightrope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did a good job. I think Tyson Miller was a nice addition. I was really surprised Seattle kind of just DFA'd him because he was pitching well. Yeah, he had good peripherals. I mean, he's not a huge, overpowering guy. He throws with, from a sidearm angle, but he was doing really well for the Mariners, and he's kind of slotting in already into a high leverage role almost with him and Colton Brewer. Behind Leiter and Neris. I think they want Ben Brown to get more starts, but I really would like to see, I think Ben Brown could be a good, high leverage, possibly closer for them. He's a fastball curveball guy anyway. We've talked about this before. Makes sense. He's probably going to be a bullpen guy long-term anyway. So
yeah,
at least for this year, just kind of commit to him being, seventh, eighth, ninth inning guy and see how that goes. Cause once the wheels fall off for Neris, I mean, then I guess they turn to Leiter but then after that, there's nowhere to go. So, they're going to either have to go outside the organization or, trust Brown, or maybe they use, I feel like Wisniewski's better, as a long man, but maybe Wisniewski could be a, short inning, late high leverage guy as well.
Yeah, and he's sort of like a one pitch pitcher too. It's right, just that incredible sweeper. Yeah. That makes sense. I think Brown and Wisniewski both as two pitch guys could be key members of this bullpen, especially in the future, but maybe the future is this season. But if you were in a very deep holds league and you were very desperate for holds, who would you target in this bullpen?
I think after Leiter, I would go with, I would chase upside and Ben Brown or maybe Wisniewski. And then, I would go with Tyson Miller before Ben. I mean, I've seen Colton Brewer. I don't think I realized he was in Japan after he was with the Red Sox and things have changed. But that's not the answer. So. Almonte was looking good too. That was another one. I know we talked about his velo being down, but he was still pitching well. And I don't know. There's just their whole bullpen that's on the IL right now is it's a pretty decent bullpen they have on the IL right now.
Yeah.
Merriweather is, when's Julian Merriweather? I haven't heard anything about how his, rib stress fracture is progressing. So that's another, difference maker if they can get him healthy.
Yeah, they really need to bring some of those guys back from the IL because this bullpen's really hurting right now. So maybe we'll see some additions before the deadline because the Cubs are very desperate right now.
Yeah.
But to wrap up the injury section, Shelby Miller of the Tigers was placed on the 15-day IL with a right ulnar nerve inflammation. It sounds pretty concerning because it's a ulnar nerve in the arm and it never good, and especially because Shelby Miller has surprisingly been good last year, not so much this year, but he's been serviceable. Though with him out, the setup situation in Detroit becomes a lot more clear, as Shelby Miller was one of the top holds options there alongside Andrew Chafin. But now with him gone, it feels like Alex Lang should finally get the chance. He'd been pitching absolutely incredibly before a big blow up a couple nights ago.
Was it Sunday or Tuesday? Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I think he allowed four runs. He had a sub one ERA at the time. It was on the 12th. He allowed four runs. But before that, I was considering you know, picking him up in leagues because it looked, he was pitching so well, and, you know, he didn't have the same strikeout numbers that he had in the past, but the ERA was so good that I was somewhat interested in the possibility of him taking over that closer role from Jason Foley, who had held it the whole year. But you know, once I dove deeper into Lang and realized he's sporting the highest walk rate of his career and it's over 16%, I was quickly turned away.
Yeah, I mean, things were turning around for a second, but then as Alex Lang does, it's kind of like the right-handed version of Aroldis Chapman, where you get two good weeks and then you just get one disastrous week, and it all starts with the command and the walk rate. Yeah, I mean, that's just not sustainable at 16%. And yeah. Foley wasn't looking good, and now, you know, the past week he's picked up a save. It looks like he's, you know, gotten the trust back. I mean, I don't know who else, you know, AJ Hinch can really trust right now, but yeah, Foley's like kind of done a 360 here where he's back in as like a pretty safe closer option, I think. Because yeah, there's just no other option that I would trust if I were, you know, Hinch in Detroit.
Totally. All right. Well, that will wrap up the injury section to kick off the podcast. Next, we're going to discuss some transactions from the past couple of weeks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler alongside Rick Graham here on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're moving on to the transaction section of our podcast as we discuss the moves from the past couple of weeks, starting with Woosuk Go, who was traded to the Marlins in the to the Marlins in the Luis Arias deal. Arias went to the Padres, but Go was one of the notable additions in the offseason by the Padres out of KBO, where he was one of the best closers in that league for the past 5 or 6 years, and he's still just 25 years old. And he was pitching in Double A for the Padres, where he was having a little bit of success, but the Marlins have moved him up to Triple A, where he's not found as much success. But he's still an interesting option, especially for a Marlins bullpen that isn't super deep. I think when he was with the Padres, it felt like he may never get a chance to be called up because they have so many options. There's so much depth in that bullpen. And even if he did get called up, Go probably wouldn't have figured into high leverage situations in San Diego. But now with the Marlins, I don't see many guys that are impeding his rise to the top of that bullpen, though we'll discuss some of the other guys in that bullpen later. Is Woosuk Go somebody that you can envision being up at some point this year and becoming fantasy relevant, or is this sort of the Marlins looking towards the future?
Yeah, I'd imagine at some point they take a look at him, probably after the deadline or so. Or maybe this summer. I don't know. He hasn't exactly blown the doors off of Double A or Triple A competition yet. It's still though. It's something we talked about last year, and I feel like it's still like kind of an issue with this Marlins bullpen. Is like they don't have that one righty that they can turn to, and like you're gonna get outs from him in the back half of the, you know, of a game. So yeah, he could work his way into a setup role pretty quickly at some point. Because it's just this bullpen, this whole pitching staff's been disappointing, but the bullpen especially.
Mm-hmm. We can move over to the Guardians, where Sam Henches was activated from the 15-day IL. He had missed the entirety of the season with a swollen finger on his pitching hand. Weird injury, but he's back. He was one of the go-to guys in the Guardians bullpen in each of the past two seasons. Last year, 15 holds. The year before, 8 holds and a save. He's back now, though he did land on the paternity list as he's set to become a father. I don't know if it's the first or the second. I don't think it matters. But Henches is back, and he could quickly figure into high leverage work in Cleveland, especially with names like Trevor Stephan, James Karinchak, and Eli Morgan out of the picture. The Guardians have been relying on pretty unknown relievers, namely Hunter Gaddis and Nick Sandlin and Tim Herron and Cade Smith. I mean, they do this every year, but it still feels like surprising every year when you go and you look at their bullpen, you're like, who are these guys and why are they so good?
Right. I mean, Herron has been kind of the fill-in for Henches as the top lefty, and he's pitched well, but I've always liked Henches. Don't know, you know, his velo is down a little bit, but again, he's only been back for a couple games, and I'm sure that will work itself out. But yeah, he should at some point take over as the top lefty there. But I don't know how many holes that's going to be because, yeah, guys like Cade Smith and Gattis and Sandlin have been so trustworthy, and they already have Barlow and Class A. So it's like, yeah, that bullpen is pretty stacked at the moment. So, you know, I haven't pushed him up, Henkes up the holds ranks too much so far, but he could definitely move up pretty quickly because we've seen him be really good in the past, you know, where he's been one of the better lefty holds options out there.
Is he somebody that you pick up in deeper leagues, or are you waiting for Henches to, you know, show he's still got it and is going to be trusted late in ball games?
Definitely in deeper leagues, AL onlys, possibly, but I think there's still, you know, 40 or so holds options I'd probably still look at before him.
Got it. All right. We can move to the Nationals, who activated Robert Garcia from the 15-day IL. He'd been out for a couple of weeks with an illness. He's definitely an unknown name, and he does have a 5.68 ERA. However, his underlying metrics are really interesting, and I wouldn't say the Nationals bullpen is impenetrable. Obviously, they got Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey at the top, and Dylan Floro somehow has a 0.41 ERA. But Robert Garcia, 5.68 ERA, comes with a 2.69 xFIP and a 2.30 xERA. And a 31% strikeout rate. I think he's somebody that could be pretty interesting. On top of that, he's also the top left-handed option in Washington. I think if Robert Garcia isn't owned in most holds leagues, he probably should.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know like right now if he needs to be rostered, but he's someone I've had an eye on. You want to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, it looks like Washington, we don't know what they're going to do. At the deadline, I would imagine they're going to sell. I know they're kind of like hanging in there right now. It's still early, but if they were to move on from Finnegan and or Harvey, then, you know, things really open up for Garcia here. I think, you know, he's got the stuff to be a setup guy, and he's left-handed, which always helps. But still, I'd not someone I would roster right now, just kind of keep an eye on, though, because he is definitely, there's some interesting stuff here with him.
Yeah, I think he could probably find more success if he stopped throwing his fastball so much. He throws it 60% of the time, except it's got a terrible shape, poor IVB, poor vertical approach angle, decent extension, but the PLV does not rate out well, while the PLV on both his changeup and slider rate in the top 25% of the league. So I think he's a guy who could benefit from throwing his fastball less, but that'll be something to keep an eye on, because right now it doesn't seem like that 31% strikeout rate is sustainable. It comes with an 11% swinging strike rate, which suggests, you know, 23% strikeout rate. So I think Garcia is going to have to change a little bit, but he's definitely somebody to keep an eye on. I think you're right to suggest to put him on your watch list and wait it out, see what happens. But we can move over to the A's, who optioned Danny Jimenez to the minors. It's not really super notable, but Jimenez has been somebody relied upon for holds in Oakland and saves as well. But with him out of the picture, it looks like Mason Miller, Lucas Erceg, and Austin Adams are going to be the top guys, which is crazy because that is an incredible bullpen trio, which I don't think anybody expected. Mason Miller looking like the best closer in baseball. Lucas Erceg quietly averaging 99 on his fastball with a 3.18 ERA and a 34% strikeout rate. And then Austin Adams has 11 holds, a 1.23 ERA, and a 33% strikeout rate. I mean, that's an incredible trio. So I don't even think the A's need Danny Jimenez anymore.
No, I mean, and all those are kind of surprising, but I at the same time, it's like, yeah, I get it with Erceg. Like, he showed, like, the stuff last year is for real. It's just
he's still figuring out how to pitch.
Right, exactly. He's figuring out how to pitch. So his command last year was terrible. And, you know, Miller transferring or, you know, going to the bullpen, obviously we knew that was going to, you know, help his stuff tick up. And then Adams, I guess, is the biggest surprise. I wasn't sure he had anything, you know, left, and he's always had issues staying healthy as well, but he's looked great so far. Hopefully he can keep that up. That would be an interesting, that could be a trade piece for the A's that they never really thought they would have, you know, at the deadline. So yeah, for now that trio is great, and they don't really need anyone else to worry about holds, but, things could definitely change at the deadline.
That is very true. All right, we'll head over to the Diamondbacks, who placed Paul Sewald on the 15-day IL. Actually, they activated him from the 15-day IL. He had been out for the first month and a half of the season with an oblique injury. Scott McGuff was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So the Scott McGuff era is over in Arizona. That was a blast early last year when I was so hyped about him, and then he ended up.
It wasn't just you. Yeah, there was a lot.
A lot of people. Yeah. Yeah. It caused a lot of stress. I just remember watching his games early on and just watching him give up home runs on pitches down the middle and just being so disappointed. But anyway, Sewald is back, which moves Kevin Ginkle into a setup role. And there was a slight possibility that if Sewald struggled and Ginkle continued to pitch well, that he may reclaim the closer role. But since being taken out of that role and plugged into the setup role, he's struggled and seen his ERA inflate over four. So with McGuff out and Ginkle moving down the ladder, it looks like Ryan Thompson and Joe Mantiply are going to be some guys getting holds as well. And I think really the most interesting guy in this bullpen right now is Justin Martinez, who I've spoken about over the past couple of years because he does throw 100 miles per hour. However, he's like 22. He might even be younger. He's 22. Yes. He's 22, but he averages 100 on his fastball. He's striking out 30% of the batters he's faced, which was something that he sort of failed to show in the majors, was striking out a lot of guys and not walking too many guys. But finally got his strikeout rate over 30% in the majors, though he's still walking a ton at 17%. I wonder if he's somebody that can move up into a high leverage role with McGuff out of the picture, but maybe with Sewald back, there's just too much depth in the later innings that Martinez is just going to have to wait a little.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I think, you know, Martinez, we've seen, this is maybe the longest stretch we've seen him actually have some success with. So, you know, in May so far, 6.2 innings, 11 strikeouts to 3 walks. We'll take that. Definitely take that all day from him. Mm-hmm. So it's good to see that. It's good to see him, you know, kind of get that strikeout to walk ratio where it should be. And after Sewald and Ginkle, I know Thompson's more of like a specialist, you know, that submarine angle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wonder, I mean, Martinez, there shouldn't be anything really keeping Martinez from being like a seventh inning setup option here for them. But I don't probably take a little bit more, you know, positive outings from him to earn that role, but he's definitely trending in the right direction. And if once we see him start getting holds chances, I mean, he's going to skyrocket up that.
Oh yeah,
up that list. The command has always been the thing, and the walks just you know, your stuff's so good, just throw strikes, man. Like, yeah. Let hitters chase, or let hitters, you know, try to figure it out in the strike zone first.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling this question is going to be pretty obvious, but in other situations, it's not. With Kevin Ginkle out of the closer role, is he a drop in basically every league? Like in 15-teamers, save-only leagues, are you dropping Kevin Ginkle, or is this like a Griffin Jack situation where you hold on and sort of hope for those vulture saves or maybe Sewald used in high leverage?
I'd probably drop him outside of, maybe a 14- or 16-teamer. It looks like
Sewald, but not a 15-teamer.
Yes, not a 15-teamer. No, only the odd leagues. Sewald is like he looks like he's back in the closer role, and Ginkle's been used in the eighth inning and not pitching well. I think Arizona's pretty. They've been pretty straight forward with like their closer usage and with Torey Lovullo. So yeah, I think it's Sewald, and you can drop Ginkle.
All right. Next bit of news is pretty unfortunate as Matt Brash of the Mariners was transferred to the 60-day IL as he underwent Tommy John surgery and will miss the remainder of the season and likely half of next year as well. Very unfortunate, as Matt Brash is one of the most fun relievers to watch and definitely could have been fantasy relevant, as he has been over the past couple of years with Andrés Muñoz being used untraditionally earlier in the season, not as of late. But with Matt Brash out of the picture and Gregory Santos on the 60-day IL, the Mariners are going to be relying heavily on Andrés Muñoz, Ryan Stanek, and Gabe Spear. Muñoz looks to be back to being used normally as the traditional closer, but you never really know if it's just the way the lineup shakes out, that that's when Munoz is being used. But Ryan Stanek hasn't really been reliable, and Gabe Spear is slowed down a little bit, probably because of the reduced velocity, but he's still striking out a ton of guys. Does Brash being out for the season move Munoz up the saves ladder?
Well, I don't know if that, I moved Munoz up the saves list this week. I don't know if it was necessarily related to Brash, but it does kind of, you know, and we had some concern about a month ago. We were thinking like, oh, Munoz is like splitting saves with Stanek, and that has completely changed in the past couple weeks. It's Munoz has gotten every save chance. So that is, you know, because you just can't, I mean, you can't trust Ryan Stanek in the ninth inning. This guy, he shouldn't be pitching in high leverage as is. And, you know, even Spear is more of a situational guy. So, yeah, this is another, you know, another team that, you know, hopes to make the playoffs this year. They're going to definitely need to get some bullpen help. Because Brash is a huge, I mean, that's outside of like Robert Stevenson, that's like the number two, you know, biggest bullpen injury this year or loss this year, I feel, is Matt Brash. So, they're, you know, Trent Thornton maybe gets more holds chances, but yeah, the rest of the bullpen is, not exactly anyone I would want to go out and roster in holds leagues. So it's really dicey here outside of Munoz, and yeah, they're going to have to find some help.
Definitely. Somebody I am excited to roster in holds leagues is Nick Birdie, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He was out with right hip inflammation. Ron Marinaccio was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Birdie is back in the Yankees bullpen. And really, outside of Clay Holmes, it's been a struggle for them to find consistent arms out of the bullpen. Ian Hamilton started the year off hot, but has really cooled off. Caleb Ferguson has not been what they signed up for. And Luke Weaver, surprisingly, one of the best relievers in baseball. But I think Nick Birdie could quickly move into high leverage, as he's pitched really well this year in a very small sample, 6 2/3, but he's got a 1.35 ERA. How excited are you about Birdie being back? And do you think he could be somebody that figures into the setup role?
We need to see more than 6 2/3, and yeah, the 1.35 ERA is nice, but it also has a 1.35 WHIP as well. So command's going to be an issue. Staying healthy is going to be an issue. Obviously, yeah, I mean, he's still throwing 98 miles per hour. So that and his slider combo, I mean, if he can stay healthy, he should be a factor, stay healthy and throw strikes, but that's, you know, I'm not sure if that's something we can, you know, consistently get from him. So, yeah, it's another bullpen that it's, you know, right now it's just Holmes kind of clinging on to, you know, that bullpen being, you know, good enough to win games, where Luke Weaver has been bailing them out. And, yeah, Ian Hamilton is not, you know, he had a good week and then kind of just like fell apart and has been very mediocre since. You know, they had Canely back soon. That's going to help them. But right now, I feel like it's, you know, Weaver is an interesting setup guy for sure. I think that could be legit. But other than that, I think Birdie's more of a watch kind of, you know, let's see what he does in the next week or two option.
Okay, that's fair. We can stay in the AL East and discuss Pete Fairbanks, who was activated from the 15-day IL. He was out for a while with a nerve issue in his right arm, but he's back and not really quelling any of the concerns we had with him prior to the injury. While he's come back and he's found success, he hasn't allowed a single base runner. The Rays have not used him in the ninth inning in save situations, which is concerning, considering that, you know, he struggled early on. So there's a bit of like, do they trust him in the ninth inning because of his early struggles, or was it injury related? And also, like, we always know Fairbanks is going to be injured at some point. And then when he came back, he had a cut on his finger, so he missed a save chance there. I don't know, but I think Fairbanks is probably going to be the closer moving forward. But do you have any other indicators? I know you mentioned that Red Sox game from yesterday, but we've seen both Jason Adam and Kevin Kelly record saves since Fairbanks' return.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, yesterday if Adam was if Adam was able to go, I wonder if they would have just given Adam the eighth and Fairbanks the ninth. But I don't know if they trusted Kevin Kelly to go at, you know, to get Rafael Devers. And
yeah,
I wonder if that's what that decision was made on. But yeah, I haven't really been on like Twitter today, but I can just picture like people being like, oh, typical Rays, Kevin Cash, this is what the Rays do. They don't use like mm-hmm. their closer. But I don't think that's what this is. I don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, let's give it some time here. I think I do think Fairbanks will be, because he is only a one inning guy. He's not, you know, it's with his, you know, health and everything, it's best for him to have kind of a set role where he knows exactly where he's going to pitch every night and
yeah,
just do that. So I think he'll be back in the ninth inning for the most part, moving forward. But yeah, it was interesting to see that last night.
Yeah, definitely a situation to monitor, but we're both very happy to have our favorite reliever, Pete Fairbanks, back in the majors. Another guy who returned to the majors, AJ Puck of the Marlins, was activated from the 15-day IL. He was out with left shoulder fatigue, and after starting the year in the rotation for the Marlins, Puck has now been returned to the bullpen, and in just his second appearance, he got a save. It was in the 10th inning after Tanner Scott pitched the ninth, so I wouldn't suggest that they are immediately plugging Puck into the closer role, though this is an indicator that maybe he's immediately the top setup option there. Calvin Fauché has been pretty great this year, 2.30 ERA, but not many high leverage situations, which is indicated by the three holds he has. So it looks like Puck might just immediately step up as the top setup man in Miami.
Yeah, I would think so. He should be at least, and that's probably the guy we're going to see take over as the closer once Tanner Scott's traded. It's only been one game. His velo is still down from where he was last year, 2 miles per hour, but it's only been one game. But I would imagine that starts to tick back up as he gets more comfortable in a relief role. At least I hope so. Because the swing that he hasn't, I don't think he's got a strikeout yet. It's only, again, only one game, but I mean, Puck's definitely the best reliever there, or most upside there, outside of maybe Andrew Nardi, who's starting to pitch better, kind of, you know, at least better than how he was in the first couple weeks of the season. So
yeah,
they're gonna rely on those lefties for as long as they have them there. It's still a left-handed dominant bullpen. So I think though, Puck, I don't think you're stashing him in, you know, standard 12 teamers yet, but you know, they could pull a trigger on the Tanner Scott trade. They traded Luis Arias, you know, in the first week of May. So anything is kind of possible here with this Marlins team that's already, you know, committed to selling this year. So Scott could go in any minute. It's hard to say when to pick up Puck, but I would still wait a little bit unless you have like an open spot where you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely be, you know, counting down the days to the deadline. And yeah, I'm going to be pushing it in my leagues in terms of waiting until the last second to pick him up. But that'll definitely be like the top guy on my watch list that I'm going to be looking to pick up as we inch closer towards the trade deadline, because it's all but guaranteed that Scott is going to be traded. Puck should be fine. I think he's probably got 2 or 3 more years of control left. He's a free agent, 27. So that's 2.5 years left. I don't think he's getting traded, especially selling low right now. But Puck does look like he's going to be the closer in Miami in the second half. But that is all speculation, as we'll need a lot of stuff to happen, including Scott being traded and Puck pitching well. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. And to wrap up the transaction section, this one's pretty minor, but Ronzi Contreras was traded from the Pirates to the Angels. This is mostly interesting just because the Angels don't have a great bullpen, and Ronzi Contreras was formerly a top starting pitching prospect. He's transitioned to the bullpen in Pittsburgh. This year he pitched to a 4.41 ERA across 16 and a third innings, struck out just 21.5% of the batters he's faced. But just given the prospect pedigree, that gets me a little bit interested. I don't think this is even a guy you need to put on your watch list, but don't be surprised if Ronzi Contreras comes out of nowhere and is suddenly one of the best relievers in the Angels bullpen, which doesn't seem like it would be too hard because everybody is bad. The best relievers they have are Hunter Strickland and Carson Fulmer. What year is it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Contreras, yeah, like you said, prospect pedigree is there and this stuff could be there. It's just, I don't, it's the landing spot is I don't have much faith in the Angels pitching development right now. Until they prove otherwise. So maybe Contreras is how they prove it, prove otherwise. But yeah, I wonder, I wonder if they think they could end up giving him a chance in the rotation as well at some point. But yeah, there's, you know, Matt Moore's really struggled. Luis Garcia has been kind of okay. And like Strickland and Fulmer, like where, what's going on there? How are those guys still relevant? So
yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a crazy bad bullpen with no upside. So that at least gives them some upside there.
Yes. Yes. And maybe we'll get Ben Joyce back at some point and then we can finally start getting excited about this bullpen that lost Robert Stevenson and disappointed us very early on in the season.
And lost Soriano to the rotation. So that's that was the other guy that like, but now there's no one really exciting there. So hopefully Contreras can figure it out.
Yeah, that would be a great story. But that will wrap up the transaction section and our injury section. When we come back from this upcoming break, we will discuss the relievers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. But first, we're going to take that aforementioned second break. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We just got done discussing trades and transactions and injuries from the past couple of weeks. And now we'll move to talking about closers that are rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. We're going to do our best to cover both of the last 2 weeks so that we don't miss anything. And also, there were a lot more moving and shaking last week than there was this week. So, Rick, do you think we should start with last week? Just because that makes more sense chronologically?
Yeah, we could kind of mix them all together, too, because, I mean,
we'll switch back and forth.
We'll just throw them all together up here and go with it. All right.
All right. Okay, cool. We'll start with Clay Holmes of the Yankees. He's rising up the closer ranks, and it's pretty clear to see why. Zero ERA, 18 and a third innings pitched, 12 saves. He's been so dominant. I don't even think he's like doing much different, but he's just been so good and probably lucky as well and has no competition in the Bronx. But Clay Holmes looking very, very dominant, and I wonder if he'll ever get touched up by a batter.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, but for now it's like he's not walking anyone. He's getting a ton of ground balls. That's his MO. But it works. It's you know, as long as he's not putting guys on base, you know, this is working. So it's you know, the Yankees have been really, they've had to rely on him because there's no other options in that bullpen as well. And I think it's been a kind of a dicey first 2 months or close to 2 months of the season with, you know, guys getting injured, guys not pitching well on the closer spectrum. So I think Holmes has been one of those steadier guys who has, you know, double digit saves and good ratios right now. So, you know, he's never going to be a huge strikeout guy, but I mean, 28.4% K rate right now is, definitely
career high.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely take that from Holmes, and his 4.1% walk rate is
career low.
Is it okay? So, I mean, is it sustainable? We'll see. But yeah, like that walk rate's, you know, top five amongst closers. So Carlos Estevez has still not walked anyone. Oh my,
that's crazy. That's good. And he sucks too.
I know. It's not, it's gonna, wow, interesting. Anyway, back to Holmes. Yeah, he's really good. I mean, great ratios, good strikeout right now, tons of saves on our good Yankees team. So yeah, what's not to like here?
Yeah, it's exactly what you want to see out of a pitcher. Having so much success is the underlying metrics to back it up. Obviously, you know, the XFIP and the XERA are in the mid twos, but that's still very incredible. And that super high ground ball rate, the career high strikeout rate, and the career low walk rate is an incredible combination that's going to lead to success throughout the year for Holmes, most likely. We can move on to James MacArthur, who continues to find success in the Kansas City bullpen. Just keeps locking down saves. He's got a 4.58 ERA, but it does not matter because he's got 10 saves. And I think it's mostly just James MacArthur is just so trustworthy now because it doesn't seem like he's going to lose the role despite John Schreiber and his 0.90 ERA.
Yeah, but if you look a little bit, I mean, Schreiber might be a little bit more smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's got like a 7% swing and strike rate, which is what brings me to MacArthur, which, yeah, the ratios for MacArthur are, I mean, you just look at that and you're like, this guy is probably going to be on the hot seat. There we go.
Well, that was close.
But, you know, the underlying metrics are still pretty favorable for him. You know, only a 3.5% walk rate, 37.1% CSW, good for eighth in baseball. PLV loves him. These metrics are high on him. So like you said, I mean, there's Schreiber, and then there's really no one else in that bullpen. And I don't think Schreiber's not closer material. So I think they're going to have to roll with MacArthur as the closer. And even with the ratios, some of those came early in the season, and he has had a couple hiccups here and there, but it's not like one of those, you know, it just hasn't been to the level where they should consider removing him from the role anytime soon. So I think if he's, you know, still available, he might still be available in leagues. You definitely want to take a look. Or if someone might want to trade him because they don't like the ratios he's providing, then also, you know, inquire about that, because I think he might be better than how his, you know, ratios show right now.
Totally. 4.58 ERA, 2.8 for XFIP. Obviously, that's not the law, but that it's definitely an indicator that he deserves better. I think the one thing that worries me is his ICR, his ideal contact rate, is very high. It's in the 15th percentile. It means he gives up a lot of hard contact, which will happen when you're living in the zone as much as he does with a 3.5% walk rate, and his stuff isn't overwhelming. But I think the trade-off there of limiting your walks and sort of, I don't know, it's sort of like your whip stays the same, but you're just sort of trading the way that it comes along.
Right.
And he's been really, really unlucky in home run to fly ball and BABIP. 364 BABIP and a 28.6% home run to fly ball ratio should both come down. So I think we will see everything even out as the season goes along, because those underlying metrics are definitely indicators of future success for MacArthur. We can move over to David Bednar, who is moving up because he has maintained the closer role despite his early struggles, and two saves across the past week, and he just continues to lower his ERA, which I think is instilling confidence in fantasy managers and fantasy analysts alike. I really think that what happened with Bednar was that he had that injury during spring training, and he only appeared in like two games, and then he started the season like injured but not on the IL, like he was still warming up, and so it sort of feels like April might have been his spring training, and now he's all warmed up, now he's ready for the regular season, and he should be good to go the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's probably what it is too. I remember when, you know, when was it? I think it was like the first week of the year where we were, you know, watching a Pittsburgh game, and we were like, why is Bednar, if Bednar is not available, why is he just like, why isn't he just on the IL? What if he's not, you know, what's going on here? It's kind of a weird usage and a weird, you know, beginning of the year for him. But I think that's all past him now, and we're back to the David Bednar we're, you know, used to seeing. Even with that 8.44 ERA, 2.94 Sierra on the season. Stuff still there, 130 stuff plus, you know, still able to miss bats at a pretty good rate, 26.7% K rate. I'm not too concerned with him. I know. Yeah. You kind of did a thing on him.
I actually have not yet.
I never got to it.
I got to do it at some point, but, I did do some research.
We're doing it right now live. So
yes.
But yeah, I mean, similar to we just talked about MacArthur giving up hard contact, I think that's kind of been an issue with Bednar, but that's not something that's, you know, we've seen from him in the past. So I do think that he can get past that. And, you know, he's got a 12.5% barrel rate, which is really high. And I think that's something that maybe just is some bad luck early in the season.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, his left on base rate is in the fifth percentile. So he's definitely been unlucky across the hotel, holy trinity of equating luck, as his BABIP is pretty high, his home run to fly ball ratio is pretty high, and his left on base rate is low. So I think Bednar should turn it around, especially as he continues to sort of get into a groove for the season.
Yeah. I think you should too. I'm just see did Pete Fairbanks not pitch today? I know we're getting off topic here. He pitched back to back.
He pitched back to back. There's no way he was going to pitch today.
Okay, so that's why Adams and getting the saved right. Okay.
Yes.
Jason Adam in for the save chance for the Rays right now.
Yeah, go out and trade for Pete Fairbanks because I think we're going to have some alarmed fantasy managers.
All right, yeah, right. I know, and Adam is not pitching well, but it looks like he's going to get the job done.
Yep. So anyway, those are the three guys that were rising last week: Clay Holmes, James McArthur, and David Bednar. We can move over to this week where Andrés Muñoz is rising up the ranks as well. We discussed him a little, but it seems to be mostly because the Mariners are happy to use him in a more traditional closer role, since Ryan Stanek has proven to be untrustworthy and has really, you know, fallen off a cliff over the past few weeks. And Andrés Muñoz continues to pitch really well, 1.47 ERA. He's gotten a couple saves this week. He's up to 7 on the season. He's striking out 34% of the batters he's faced. And then all the underlying metrics suggest that it's totally deserved. And I think we're back to Andrés Muñoz looking like the future number one closer in baseball, as long as he continues to be used as a closer.
Yeah, I mean, he's been absolutely lights out the past couple weeks, and you know, it's 9.1 innings, a 30% strikeout minus walk rate, 20.4% swinging strike rate, no earned runs. You know, he's getting all the save chances, and you know, Brash out for the year, Santos, who knows, Stanek's not pitching well. It's just like, and they use him, you know, and he got 5 outs last night. I mean, that's going to happen probably more and more because they're going to have to rely on him for that. And that kind of concerns me because I just want to make sure he holds up for the full season, and the type of 5 out usage. We'll see how that takes a toll, but if he's able to, you know, go out and get 4 strikeouts and 5 outs and get a save, then that's great for fantasy managers. But right now, no complaints at all. I was starting to, you know, after the first 2 weeks of the year, I was getting a little down on him, but now it's, you know, turned around, complete 180. So hopefully this holds up. Hopefully he holds up. And yeah, they still need to get some help in front of him, but Munoz is not the problem there. He's been lights out.
Definitely somebody you can trust as a top 10 closer moving forward. And we can move on to our next guy. Trevor McGill of the Brewers has looked to be the team's go-to closer, which is something that we predicted long, long ago, like 2 months ago. And it finally came to fruition as Devin Williams on the IL, Abner Ribe to the minor leagues, Yoel Piam struggling, now up to a 5.14 ERA. And with 2 saves the past week, Trevor McGill now leads the Brewers in saves and has a 1.69 ERA. I think the only concerning thing is a reduced strikeout rate, which is very out of character for him. And I do expect it to come up as he's got a swinging strike rate at 14.5%, which suggests a strikeout rate close to 30%. And he's closer to 25% right now. But Trevor McGill is the go-to closer in Milwaukee. And I think he's somebody that you should be looking to acquire before he really starts to dominate, because obviously he was recovering for a while from a concussion that kept him out for a couple of weeks. And even, you know, not being at the top of his game, he's still pitching incredibly.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at with him. It's like, well, all right, well, now at least we know he's the closer there in Milwaukee. Piamps has worked himself out of the job, and there's no one else really competing. Hudson's been so good.
My guy.
He's been their best, second best, maybe their best reliever. Cause yeah, McGill hasn't so really, I mean, McGill really, yeah, he hasn't really turned it on yet. Which is funny because he's still been good, but he's not like, all right, there's definitely more swing and miss here. But like, you know, we'll take the ratios, obviously 1.69 ERA, 0.94 whip, CSW at 32.7% is pretty good. And then, you know, the metric, like PLV loves him, 5.43, Stuff Plus has him at 154. 154 Stuff Plus is the second best among all relievers, nice, behind only Mason Miller at 155. Wow. So, I mean, yeah, and you see it when you, I mean, his fastball is at 99, and when he's up great at the top IVB. Of the, yeah, when he's at the top of the zone, he's absolutely unhittable. And then the breaking ball is silly as well. So it's like you said, I think you should still roster him, but they, you know, what happens when Devin Williams comes back? And that's gonna, you know, I still would want to get the 2 months from McGill that I can before Williams returns. And you never know, something could happen where Williams has a setback. That those back issues are obviously tricky. So that's not set in stone that he returns, you know, by the All-Star break, like he says. So yeah, McGill's definitely someone who, if he's still available somehow, go get him. I think as good as he's been, I think there's more here. Hopefully there's more here. I want to see those strikeout numbers really, you know, start to tick up, but even still, he's been great.
And our last riser, and there's no surprise here, is Mason Miller, who is now in the top tier of closers at number 4. And it's totally deserved. He's been absolutely incredible this year. Huge fastball, bonkers slider, sub 1 ERA, sub 0.7 whip. The highest strikeout rate in the majors at 56.7%. That's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, he's so dominant, and he would probably be number 1 if he didn't pitch for the A's. And didn't have the injuries and the
right issue. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit of both. But even still pitching for the A's, he's still, you know, how many saves is he up to now? It's
8. He's 9th in baseball.
So, I mean, sure. Yeah. Yeah, the strikeout rate is just stupid. 0.55 Sierra.
He's got a negative FIP, negative 0.26.
he's doing thing. I mean, this is stuff like Felix Bautista did for a minute, like last year, and like Edwin Diaz did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's really, yeah, he's on another level from every other closer, but it's the A's, it's the health concerns. He's new to this. Let's see, you know, and then there's the trade rumors. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it makes sense for them to trade him, but I do. I mean, if someone's willing to give up like a crazy amount of or a crazy prospect package, then it might be hard for the A's to say no. I do think that there's, you know, usually I feel like someone like this is more smoke than fire, but I do think there's a chance. I think there's a decent chance he gets traded, like 40% maybe, because there's a lot of teams out there that need relievers. And yeah, you're going to have to give up a lot to get him, but it, you know, you hope that he can stay healthy in a relief role, and then you have him for the next 5 years doing this, then, you know, that's obviously worth it. So I, you know, could see him in a lot of different places. I just depends on who, you know, is willing to give up the prospect ammo, but there's, I mean, no matter what, I think he should be closing wherever he goes, because yeah, like look at these numbers. I mean, he's the best reliever in baseball. So this is definitely gonna be fun to keep an eye out for, you know, the trade rumors with him, which is crazy because again, this is just his like first full year in the majors, and like you usually don't see, you know, trade rumors like this for someone like, you know, in their first full season.
Yeah, it just makes so much sense for the A's because it doesn't feel like Miller's going to be around for the A's next competitive window. So yeah, it's like they might as well trade him like now while his value is at the highest, because he's got all those years of control and because he's pitching so incredibly and he hasn't had any injuries this year. Like his trade value is only going to go down. I don't see any way that like trading him next year or in the off season nets them any more value, because all it does is give him more opportunity to get injured or regress or whatever. And right now they could just get so much, and it might be too much, honestly, because I don't know what team would be willing to give up the prospect capital needed to bring Miller aboard. Though I have a feeling he'll probably just get traded to the Braves for a $2 bill and a bag of peanuts or something. That's how it always goes. So we'll see how that goes.
They did mention I forget who was talking about him. Someone mentioned the Braves, and it makes sense. Those two teams have made trades in the past, and I'm sure that the Braves have no problem giving up all of their top pitching prospects for him or whatever. You know, it's going to be like 4 of their top pitching prospects for him.
I just don't know if they have enough ammo because they made that trade for Aaron Bummer in the offseason, and that sort of took away a lot of their depth in the minor league. So it's like right now it's, I don't think Smith, Shaver, Waldrep, and Dodd really move the needle to get Miller.
Maybe Owen Murphy's been pitching well for them. I wonder. I don't know. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of teams that inquire. But yeah, because I believe Iglesias is in the last year of his deal too. So that just fits in perfectly where Miller takes over as the closer. And man, imagine, going from if Spencer Strider comes back healthy from Strider to Miller in a game. I mean, just good luck.
That'd be awesome. That'd be so cool.
That would be fun.
Iglesias still has another year of control at $16 million. So he will still be around next year. But yeah, I would not put it past the A's giving the Braves a big discount and just letting them have them. But those are the relievers going up the ranks over the past couple of weeks. Clay Holmes, James MacArthur, David Bednar, Andres Munoz, Trevor McGill, and Mason Miller. Well, now with those guys rising up the ranks, that means other guys have to fall down the ranks. So we'll discuss the closers falling down Rick's closer ranks, starting with the aforementioned Raisel Iglesias. And he's just not really been as dominant as he has been in the past. Still having success, still the clear-cut closer in Atlanta. He's got 10 saves, got a 2.76 ERA, though it comes with a 16.2% strikeout rate, which is a pretty decent drop-off from the marks he's been at in previous years when he was at or above 30% for 4 or 5 consecutive years. And now he's at 16%. So that's he's cut it in half. And that's definitely very concerning. The swinging strike rate suggests he's been unlucky. He should be closer to 25%, but that's still a pretty decent drop off from the 17 and 20% swinging strike rates he was putting up over the past few years.
There's only 5 closers, current closers that have a strikeout to walk rate below 10%, and Iglesias is one of them at 8.8% with Alexis Diaz in there, Jalen Beeks, Hector Neris, Tanner Scott. Yeah. So I know the Tanner Scott one hurts. I didn't want to say it, but I feel like we have to disclaimer. But yeah, Iglesias just he's been very mediocre at best this year, and it hasn't hurt. I mean, it's not hurting you fantasy wise. The ratios are fine, getting saves. The lack of swing and miss is concerning. I believe he upped his changeup usage last year, and I thought that might help get him some more swings and misses, and it's still getting the bulk of the whiffs, but the four seamer and the fastballs just are kind of, they're just too hittable at this point. He's lost some velo, and I don't know, he's fine. He's just not, he's not a top 10 closer, I don't think, right now.
Yeah, definitely not. It's been pretty concerning too. And then also even on top of the reduced strikeout rate is the increased walk rate. So, I mean, even if you considered, maybe he's just trying to throw more strikes, he's not. And maybe that's the biggest problem, is that he hasn't been living in the zone as much. It looks like the zone rate on his fastball has dropped a good 7%. The zone rate on his changeup has dropped. It's actually increased, but he's been unable to locate his fastballs. Both his four seamer and his sinker have seen the zone less often. And in the past he was able to, put them where he wanted to. And it doesn't seem like he's been able to do that. So that's probably the biggest problem with Iglesias, and it sort of makes sense since he's 34, he's getting into his, mid-30s. Right. It's not the time for a reliever to really take it to another level, especially after all the success. Though he's not a drop anywhere, still a top 15 closer, still the top guy in Atlanta. And I don't know what it would take really for him to lose that role.
Yeah, there's a lot of options there, but I feel like he would have to, blow up good amount of games in a short period of time for them to lose trust in him. They're aggressive. I mean, maybe they go out and make a splash at the deadline and look towards the future a little bit more while also trying to win now. Who knows with this team, but I feel like he's pretty safe. I'm not too concerned about him losing his job.
Yeah, just trade Raisel straight up for Mason Miller, and then the A's can have a closer next year, and then they can also trade him at next year's deadline. That actually sort of makes some sense, and I would not be surprised if there's exactly you pair him with some prospects and eat most of the salary. I could see that happening. We'll see. We'll stop speculating on Mason Miller trades, because I'm sure that's going to get tiring in as we talk about it for the next 2 months. But we can move over to Tanner Scott, who's not been great this year. And it's because he's just walking everybody. And, you know, despite finding success recently, I think he's sporting a pretty decently long scoreless inning streak. Like it's
10.1 innings.
Nice. That's pretty good. The only problem is the walks are still there.
Hey, yeah, a little bit. They're getting
better.
He's
looking better.
Yeah. It's not the, he's looking better. That's not the issue. It's just the fact that he is going to get traded, and it's not like he's making a convincing argument for him to be a closer wherever he ends up right now. So, that's mostly why I've moved him down. Also, it's, you know, he's only had one save in May because the Marlins have been atrocious.
They're so bad.
That's a big issue. Hopefully he can get on. I think they're waiting for him to get on like a little run here, and he starts racking up saves, and then they'll probably trade him. But it's really just a, you know, where is he going to end up? What's his role going to be? That's my big concern with him, because the stuff's still there. He's still, you know, top five stuff plus guy. It's just, I mean, the command watching him is very, very frustrating this year. Even when he's not walking guys, it's still like when he gets to like 2-1 counts and the two balls are just like not even close to the strikes. So it's just like all over the place.
Nick always talks about when you watch a pitcher, is he like battling the batter or is he battling himself? And it really feels like Scott's battling himself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you can, it's just like feels like he's just like trying so hard to locate a fastball like somewhere in the strike zone.
Yeah, just and throw when you, your pitch, bro.
And he's, I don't know what the actual numbers are off the top of my head, but the four seamer has been the issue. It's the slider he's actually been able to locate somewhat decently, but the fastball has just been a mess for him. So that's, you know, he needs to get that right before, you know, we talk about a top 10 closer if he was to be a closer for the rest of the season somewhere. But yeah, there's a bunch of concerns with the command and obviously where he winds up.
Totally. The next guy we have falling down the list, the last one from last week, is Jordan Romano, who has really not looked good since returning from the IL. He's got a 5.06 ERA. He does have six saves, though. It's been really rocky. He's got a sub 19% strikeout rate after being a guy who struck out a pretty decent amount of batters throughout his career. He's 30% for his career. So this is definitely below what we'd expect from him. And then meanwhile, Yimi Garcia just continues to be incredible. 0.53 ERA in 17 innings. He's got 34% strikeout rate. And I really feel like we are like one or two more blown saves from Romano before we see Garcia in the ninth.
Yeah, I can see that. That's how it should be, at least.
Totally.
And Romano, this Blue Jays team has got to make a decision on, I don't know what they're, because they're not playing well. If they're going to sell, do they sell just free agents to B, or do they sell guys Romano, who
really,
you know,
interesting situation.
Yeah. Cause you know, they have a bunch of guys who are on, you have 2 years left there, and like, obviously the big two are Bichette and Guerrero, but you get Romano's in that category too. And I wonder if he could be a trade candidate this year, depending on what they end up doing. So that's a concern, but he hasn't pitched well. It would be weird if they sold low on him. I guess that's another thing, but maybe he's had enough good innings in his past where a team would take a chance on him.
Yeah, I sort of have a feeling that they'll plug Garcia into the closer role for a month and a half so that they can raise his trade value, because he is set to be a free agent after this season, and he would be a huge trade chip. So maybe they just take it easy on Romano for a little bit so that he can get his mojo back, trade Garcia at the deadline, and then Romano takes back over in the second half.
Yeah, I could see that happening. So, you know, Eric Swanson's another one there who's really struggled. I feel like he's got to go back to Seattle. Would Seattle get him back and turn him around, be their setup guy there?
Yeah.
I feel like that could be a deal for both
teams. Makes sense for them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, why not take a chance there? But that's just a pure speculation. Uh-huh. Romano, you know, not missing bats right now. Yimi Garcia has definitely been better and should be closing out games. But yeah, we'll see. I think you're right. Like another bad outing or two, I think that switch happens.
Mm-hmm. We can stick in the AL East as we transition to the guys moving down this week, starting with Craig Kimbrell, who has sort of been removed from the closer role. He's not been getting saves as he attempts to figure out what's been ailing him. I read some reports that he's working on tweaking his delivery so that he can get back to what he was doing in the first month of the season. It makes sense. I've always noted Kimbrell's struggles with repeating his delivery, and that always seems to be the one thing for him, because it's like if he cannot control his fastball, then everything falls apart, especially now when he's pitching with reduced velocity. His control and command of the fastball is even more important. Luckily, though, we've seen him have, figure things out over the past week, and maybe he does reclaim that closer role. But right now, Yennier Cano and Danny Coulomb are both looking really good, so they don't really need to rely on Kimbrell. Do you think he takes over this closer role again, or is this a situation where it's like, you know, sell Kimbrell while he's still can?
I don't think you're going to get anything if you're selling him. I don't think I'd sell, maybe even buy low, because he's been pitching better for the most part since he got removed and no one's really taken over that closer role. I mean, Cano has been okay. He's had some, he doesn't have any blowups really, but he does have, some sketchy outings in the past couple weeks. Coulomb's pitched really well, but I feel like they just don't want him to be their closer or work that type of role. So I do think we see Kimbrell back in the closer role probably as soon as this weekend. Maybe there's a little bit of a buy low window here, but yeah, I do. Cause it's the command of his fastball, which starts with his mechanics, and that does tend to come and go with him, especially when he was battling a back injury. That's not going to help his mechanics out. So at his age, that could be something that lingers. So it's, there's a risk there in buying low, but I think, depending on what the asking price is or if he's available, it's worth a look, I guess, to see how he bounces back.
Yeah. Speaking of elderly closers, Kirby Yates is also moving down your closer ranks. He's not been getting many opportunities over the past couple of weeks. The Rangers just have not been playing close games where they can provide him save opportunities. And on top of that, the guys pitching before him are blowing saves before he can even get the opportunity. So he's been pretty unlucky. He also surrendered his first earned runs of the season, but still sporting a 1.04 ERA and a 31% strikeout rate. He doesn't seem to be at risk of losing the closer role, but the signs of regression are there. He's very old, not very old. Sorry. Yeah. You guys are probably very similar in age. He's a grandpa.
He's old to me. All right.
I'm joking. But anyway, it feels like, he's not going to pitch to a one ERA for the whole season, and the Rangers just aren't providing him enough save opportunities to make him a top arm. I think he's still a guy you want to roster, but we might be nearing the time where you want to sell high on Yates, as the ERA is going to start inflating and the save numbers are going to fall away from the pack.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought. Is if you're in a pretty good position with closers and saves, if he's expendable to your roster, and then I would look to move Yates now. There's a chance he remains the closer all year round, but there's going to be some regression here. He was definitely overachieving a little bit early on. And now the walks are starting to come back. The walk issue was a big problem last year. And it just comes down, he's so splitter reliant where, teams will, eventually good teams, good lineups are going to start, laying off that splitter more and more. So he should be fine. I mean, Robertson's probably the best reliever there still, but I think Yates and Robertson are both, they're doing fine in their roles and there's nothing to be concerned about. But yeah, if someone really wants Yates, if you can get a nice bat or starting pitcher in return, then go for it.
All right. And then lastly, we've got Alexis Diaz, who's falling down the ranks once again. He just continues to struggle. 6.75 ERA. He doesn't seem to be putting things together. I just don't know why they won't give Fernando Cruz the chance. He completely deserves it. Like his ERA is inflated, and I think it's undeserved at 4.50. He strikes out so many batters, and Diaz has been not good for like 6 months. So yeah. I don't know why they aren't switching things around here. I feel like it's gonna happen at any moment, and if Fernando Cruz is on your wire, I think you gotta go get him while you still can.
The thing with Cruz is like he's starting to struggle at the worst possible. If Cruz yeah. was,
it's like the Cruz, Hunter Harvey, yeah. Kyle Finnegan,
right,
last year.
Right. It's like when, yeah, if Cruz wasn't pitching poorly right now, I mean, yeah, this switch might have happened. Because yeah, Diaz has been just terrible. He shouldn't be closing out games. So if it doesn't end up being Fernando Cruz, I mean, even Lucas Sims or Emmanuel Pagan are better options. And Pagan hasn't been great, but he's been a little bit better lately. And he's got an interesting fastball shape where, you know, I don't, PLV is huge on his, they're really, really high on his fastball. So Sims is more of a slider guy. And then, yeah, Cruz should be the closer, but he's got to limit the walks more. And, you know, just he gets hit around a little bit. And again, Cruz is a splitter guy. So this, like we said with Yates, it's kind of hot and cold with those types where if mm-hmm. they're getting swings and misses, then it's, you know, obviously it's working. But I don't know. We'll see. I hope Cruz is the closer there by the end of the month or by June at least. For Diaz, I don't even know. You're not going to be able to trade him. I don't think you necessarily drop him unless you're in a 10 team league, maybe a 12 teamer. You can drop him, but yeah, it's tough to if you rostered him, if you drafted him, it's been a tough start to the season.
Yeah, and you clearly were not listening to our podcast.
I know. So that's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah, those are the closers falling down the ranks. To recap, Raisel Iglesias, Tanner Scott, Jordan Romano, Craig Kimbrell, Kirby Yates, and Alexis Diaz. And that will wrap up this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you plug your Twitter and anything else you are working on this week?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Working on, as usual, just, you know, closer ranks, holds ranks, save plus hold ranks. Every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, those will be out.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I do the weekend editions of Pitcher List's daily podcast, the First Pitch podcast. I do reliever ranks every Monday. I'm hopefully coming out with a David Bednar article sometime this month. And I also write articles over at Baseball HQ. And have my personal podcast, which made its long-awaited return yesterday. So go check that out over at Athletes Hub on Twitter. But that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.